Sonia Cecil, again, who will be providing an introduction to our session today. Sonia?
Okay, thank you, Jean. So I wanted to welcome everybody to the webinar on the CERCLA 108B Financial Responsibility Rulemaking for Facilities in the Petroleum and Coal Products Manufacturing Industry. I first wanted to note, you may have noticed a slight change in the coverage of this webinar. Initially, it was going to cover the proposal for the chemical manufacturing industry as well. That one didn't quite make it through the pipeline in time, so we are back to just addressing petroleum and coal products manufacturing. We expect that the chemicals proposal should be signed fairly shortly, and we will look at scheduling another webinar for that one when the time comes. So again, we're covering the proposal for the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry. And with that, I will turn it over to Peggy Villa.
Okay, thank you, Sonia. I get to turn the slides on. There we go. So today we're going to be going over, first of all, the purpose of today's webinar. Then I'll be doing a brief background on CERCLA 108B, going over the litigation history of 108B, briefly going over our rulemaking schedule, the rulemaking history, then an overview of today's proposal, our decision to not propose requirements, any potential tribal interests, and then ending with how to provide comment to today's proposal. Next slide. Okay, so the purpose of today's webinar is to give you an overview, hopefully not too confusing, of CERCLA 108B, to give you our storied history of EPA's actions with respect to 108B, and then to give you an overview and to familiarize you with the current proposal of 108B with regards to the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry. So, here we go. So, the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act, which for obvious reasons I will refer to as CERCLA from here on out, it's also known as Superfund, establishes the Comprehensive Environmental Response and Cleanup Program, which generally speaking is what is authorized EPA to undertake the removal and remediation of what are known as Superfund sites, sites in which there are releases of hazardous substances or any other kind of pollutants or contaminants. CERCLA also imposes liability for the cost associated with these cleanups. The liability is spread across any potential responsible parties, and it can include not only current owners and operators, but past owners and operators, any generators of the hazardous substances, any arrangers or transporters of the hazardous substances. It's important that this list of anybody that's potentially responsible is very broad and varied. Specifically, Section 108B of CERCLA directs EPA to develop regulations that require classes of facilities to establish evidence of financial responsibility that is consistent with the degree and duration of risk associated with the production, transportation, treatment, storage, or disposal of hazardous substances, and to establish the level of financial responsibility and, when necessary, adjust it to protect against the level of risk that EPA, in its discretion, believes is appropriate based on the payment experience of the fund. It's important to note that this statutory language on determining this degree and duration of risk and on setting the level of financial responsibility confers a significant amount of discretion on EPA in setting these levels. Setting risk determination is obviously dependent on a lot of different factors, and so Congress wanted EPA obviously to have this discretion because of all these different factors. CERCLA 108B also instructed EPA specifically to publish within 3 years of the date of the enactment of the statute, which was 1980, a so-called priority notice, which would identify classes of facilities for which EPA would first develop such financial responsibility requirements. The priority for development of these requirements was to be accorded to the classes of facilities that presented the highest level of risk or injury. Now, before I move on to the next slide, I just wanted to mention that after the enactment of CERCLA in 1980, the agency was involved in the passing of many regulations that prevented Superfund, or at least tried to prevent the Superfund sites from happening. We were involved in the cleaning up of a lot of Superfund sites, remediation of Superfund sites. But one thing we didn't do was the priority notice. So, in March of 2008, a group of various organizations sued EPA for not complying, and the court then ordered EPA in 2009 to do the priority notice, which we did later that year. And the class of industry that we identified was the hard rock mining industry. So that was the class of industry that we identified for potential financial responsibility regulations. We also indicated in that notice that we would be looking at other industries for possible 108B regulation. Towards that end, in early 2010, we published an advance notice of proposed rulemaking where we identified three additional industries: the electric power generation, transmission and distribution industry, and the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry, and the chemical manufacturing industry. Neither that petroleum notice or this advanced notice of proposed rulemaking actually proposed regulations. We were just identifying classes of industries where we were going to pursue regulation or look into the need for financial responsibility requirements under CERCLA 108B. In August of 2014, the litigants in the initial lawsuit sought a writ of mandamus seeking the actual issuance of the proposed rules. And we entered into negotiations with the litigants through the court where we were then put on a schedule to come up with proposed and final rules for not only the hard rock mining industry, but also we had to then determine if we were going to pursue regulations for those three so-called additional classes. And so we published in January of 2017 a notice of intent to proceed with rulemakings where we stated we did intend to proceed with rulemakings for those three so-called additional classes. However, this notice did not indicate that we were going to do 108B regulations. It just indicated that we were going to determine if there was sufficient evidence to warrant regulations under CERCLA 108B. And then if we determined there was enough evidence, then we would propose such requirements. That put us on the schedule, which you see right here. The court did not say which of the industries would be first, second, or third. That they left that up to the agency. So we chose electric utilities to be first, and the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry to be second, and chemical manufacturing to be third. It's important to note that the dates that you see there are when we have to do these rules by, no later than, but we can always do them earlier than. And in fact, the chemical manufacturing proposed rule we intend to do sooner than the date that you see there. And most likely the finals for both the second and third industry will be sooner than the dates that you see. So the rulemaking history, by the court order, we did the proposed rule for the hard rock mining industry. We signed that on December 1st of 2016. And then a year later, we signed the final action, which was to not issue regulations for the hard rock mining industry. We base that final decision on EPA's interpretation of the statute and also on our analysis of the record addressing the risks to taxpayer-funded cleanups at hard rock mining facilities operating under modern management practices and the modern environmental regulations. Not surprisingly, the litigants challenged the final rule, and the court upheld our interpretation of the statute and our decision to not impose financial responsibility requirements on the hard rock mining industry. In July last year, we signed a proposed rule on the first of the three additional classes, the electric power generation, transmission, and distribution industry. That proposed rule was also based on the similar interpretation of the 108B statute from the hard rock mining final. It was consistent with the same analytic principles that we'd used in that final action. We solicited public comment on that proposed rule, and we also had supporting information and analyses that was in the docket for that rule. So now we are at the current proposal, which is on the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry. We are again proposing to not impose financial responsibility requirements under CERCLA 108B based on the conclusion that the degree and duration of risk posed by this industry does not warrant financial responsibility requirements under CERCLA 108B. We will present the supporting information analysis that we use to reach this conclusion, and this analysis is consistent with what we did for the hard rock mining final action and in the electric power generation, transmission, and distribution proposed rule. We are soliciting public comment on this proposal, and supporting information in our analysis is available in the docket, which we will go over later. The analytic approach for this proposal: we evaluated the risks by examining the record of releases of any hazardous substances from facilities that were in this industry, in combination with the payment history of the fund, and also looked at enforcement settlements and any judgments. We considered historical cleanup cases to identify any potential risks at currently operating facilities where taxpayer funds were expended for any response actions. We assessed the risk posed by facilities operating under modern conditions, that is, the types of facilities to which financial responsibility requirements would apply. And we identified and considered relevant current federal and state regulatory requirements, financial responsibility requirements, and any voluntary protective practices. The areas of our analyses include an industry characterization, which looked at current industry practices and operations, the industry economic profile, cleanup sites analysis, the role of federal and state regulatory programs, as well as industry voluntary protective practices, existing state and federal financial responsibility programs, and compliance and enforcement history with this industry. Facilities in this industry are characterized in the NAICS code of 324, which is defined as facilities involved in the transformation of crude petroleum and coal into usable products. The most recently available census data identifies the size of this industry at about 2,167 establishments nationally. The sector is relatively stable financially and has a low default risk. And now I'm going to turn it over to Mike Pease to go over our cleanup sites analysis.
Yeah, thanks, Peggy. I'll still peg you for a bit so she can catch her breath. And I'll go over the cleanup site analysis, which in the next few slides I'll kind of go over the intent and like the thinking behind this cleanup site analysis, some of the steps we took, and the results. But also note this, that the section is described, or the analysis is described in more detail in Section 7 of the proposal called Discussion of Cleanup Site Analysis. So for more detailed information, you could always go there. Anyway, so the cleanup site analysis. In evaluating the need for financial responsibility requirements, EPA focused on assessing response actions at Superfund NPL sites and also sites using the Superfund alternative approach. So, and those Superfund alternative approach sites are, we looked at them at the same time as the NPL sites because they're kind of NPL caliber in terms of the scope of the cleanup. We also looked at Superfund removals and other non-NPL Superfund cleanups. To do so, we collected information on the timing and nature of releases or threatened releases at the sites. Specifically, we tried to identify facility operation indicts, the release dates, the sources of contamination at the sites, any NPL proposal dates, contaminated media at the site, the types of contaminants, the cleanup lead, and also just information on the Superfund expenditures to date at the sites or associated with the sites. So EPA identified class or cases where releases had occurred under a modern regulatory structure and where the releases at those sites resulted in fund-financed response actions. That was kind of our goal. Or we were interested in seeking those types of cases. The NPL or Superfund alternative approach sites where the pollution incident occurred before 1980, which is the year that CERCLA was enacted and initial regulations under the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, or RCRA, Subtitle C of that statute, which regulates the hazardous waste treatment, storage, disposal, and also generation, were promulgated. So anything before 1980 were screened out. And then we also looked at the sites and removed sites where significant fund expenditures had not occurred by screening out sites that were tagged as PRP lead. And then finally, we looked at those remaining sites and in much greater detail kind of looked at the site's history and all the pollution sources at the site and the context of the regulations that apply today or would apply today in order to see, like, would those kind of issues arise today? So the results of the cleanup site analysis for the NPL and Superfund alternative approach sites are on page, or in slide 20. So for the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry, we were able to identify 34 NPL or Superfund alternative approach sites where petroleum or coal product manufacturing had occurred at the site. Of those, 26 were screened out based on either being pre-1980, where the pollution occurred pre-1980, or they had a PRP lead. Of the remaining 8 sites, the detailed review concluded that releases occurred prior to the modern regulatory framework at 6 of them. And then those, the 2 remaining sites at that point, they had possible modern, like, releases that occurred under, like, a modern regulatory framework, but upon looking at the actual Superfund expenditures at the sites, there were not significant taxpayer expenditures. And so there was actually ended up being no sites, no NPL or Superfund alternative approach sites in this industry where releases under modern regulations required taxpayer-funded responses. With respect to the removals and then the non-NPL Superfund cleanups, there were 51 sites identified in this industry where removals had occurred, of which 30 were screened out because the pollution occurred pre-1980 or at a PRP lead status. And additionally, on closer review, 16 of them were identified as not actually having significant petroleum or coal product manufacturing activity at those sites. And that left 5 remaining sites to evaluate, of which the detailed review of those sites, for 2 of which, concluded that releases occurred prior to the modern regulatory framework. Another 2 were found to have had possible releases under a modern regulatory framework, but there were still no significant taxpayer expenditures. And then finally, there was, in this industry, 1 example of a removal where there were releases under the modern regulatory framework and required non-trivial taxpayer expenditures. And in looking at all those cleanup cases, I guess the 1 takeaway is that EPA identified a limited number of cases in the industry where contamination arose under a modern regulatory framework and resulted in significant fund expenditures. In this case, it was just 1 removal site. And the sources of contamination observed at the NPL, Superfund Alternative Approach, and non-NPL removal sites were varied, but the most common and prevalent sources of contamination included unlined or leaking storage tanks, drums, surface impoundments, and surface water lagoons, abandoned units, and uncontrolled polluted stormwater runoff.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Yep.
Okay, so furthering the analysis, we then looked at the role of existing federal and state regulatory programs and also voluntary protective practices. So EPA was able to identify a range of existing federal and state financial responsibility programs that were applicable to facilities within this industry. EPA is basing its regulatory decision in this notice on risk posed by facilities operating under these modern conditions, that is the types of facilities to which financial responsibility requirements would apply. Thus, EPA gathered information about federal and state environmental programs and voluntary programs that apply to currently operating facilities in the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry. EPA evaluated the extent to which activities that contributed to the risk associated with the production, transportation, treatment, storage, or disposal of hazardous substances are now regulated, with a focus on the prevalent sources of contamination identified in the cleanup sites analysis that Mike just described. EPA found that a comprehensive regulatory framework has been developed since the enactment of CERCLA, including regulations under various federal statutes, including the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Toxic Substance Control Act, and the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act. In particular, the comprehensive regulations for the management and disposal of hazardous waste, which were promulgated under RCRA, were designed to prevent these various types of releases and to assure that spills are cleaned up by facility owners and operators. RCRA was passed in 1976 and was amended by the Hazardous and Solid Waste Amendments in 1984. One thing that came out of HISWA were the Land Disclosure Restrictions Program, and they in particular led to the cradle-to-grave management of hazardous waste. From the moment these hazardous waste are generated until they're safely disposed in the ground, it's done a lot to prevent the occurrence of these releases. In addition, Section 112R of the Clean Air Act amendments, which require facilities that generate risk management plans, which mitigate the effects of chemical accidents and also allow the coordination with local response personnel. Significant chemical accidents have declined by more than 50% since the original RMP requirements became effective in 1999. Specific federal and state regulations address issues related to air and water pollution, as well as emergency planning and response, hazardous substance management, and hazardous and non-hazardous waste disposal. EPA found that the network of federal and state regulations applicable to this particular industry creates the comprehensive framework that applies to prevent releases that could result in the future need the need for future cleanup. In addition, voluntary programs, EPA was able to review a variety of industry materials, government literature, as well as academic literature. And we found that the industry voluntary programs are effective at reducing pollution and the frequency of government enforcement actions. There are specific financial responsibility programs that are not CERCLA. We reviewed these and they cover a wide range of liabilities. For instance, under RCRA, there's closure, post-closure care, corrective action, third-party personal injury, property damage, as well as natural resource damages. These categories of damages, actions, and cost are like those that would be covered by a CERCLA 108B rulemaking, and thus they help inform the need for whether or not we need CERCLA 108B financial responsibility requirements. In addition, these existing financial responsibility programs help create incentives for sound practices, including the risk of release requiring any CERCLA response actions. We also looked at compliance and enforcement. Compliance monitoring can identify non-compliance at regulated facilities. Enforcement provides legal instruments to ensure correction of deficiencies and cleanup. We use the Enforcement and Compliance History Online Data System, which includes major CERCLA and RCRA enforcement cases. The compliance and enforcement actions that ensure responsible parties conduct or pay for cleanups serves to drive returns to compliance and incentivizes compliance, which are documented in the ECHO data system. It demonstrates proper functioning of the modern regulatory framework. Active enforcement serves as an important component of this regulatory framework. Based on these analyses, EPA concluded that the degree and duration of risk posed by this industry does not warrant financial responsibility requirements under CERCLA 108B, and thus we are proposing to not issue such requirements. As Mike indicated, we identified only one case in this sector where contamination arose under the modern regulatory framework, which did result in a significant fund expenditure. The analysis and proposed findings are not applicable and do not affect, limit, or restrict EPA's authority to take response actions or enforcement actions under CERCLA at any particular facility. The rulemaking record that supports this proposal for this class, but a different set of facts could demonstrate a need for a CERCLA response action at any individual site. This proposed rulemaking also does not affect the agency's authority under other authorities that may apply at individual facilities, such as authorities under the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, RCRA, or TSCA. CERCLA authorities do apply in Indian country, so a decision to regulate or not regulate facilities under CERCLA 108B would apply to such facilities that would be in or near Indian country. EPA therefore encourages tribes to submit comments to the docket to identify information on existing tribal financial responsibility requirements and any other information that you believe may be relevant to the development of this rule. If a tribe believes they could be affected by this proposed action, EPA invites the tribe to consult with EPA prior to us issuing the final rule. The deadline to contact EPA is February 28, 2020. Similarly, any potential Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act corporate interests are also encouraged to contact us, and the deadline is the same. And now to provide comments to this proposed rule, there's a link here on this slide. If you click on this link, you'll be taken to the page on regulations.gov where you can access the notice, leave comments, and also access the background documents. And we can do a demonstration for you now. Mike can show you how to leave comments and how to get to the background documents.
Yeah, thanks. I'm just going to bring up and share my screen with folks. And all right, so hopefully everybody now sees my screen, and what should be up is a website, a regulations.gov website, which is the actual, if you follow the link at in the last slide in the webinar, it'll take you to this page, which is just actually the docket page itself for this proposal or this rulemaking. And from which you can access a variety of helpful bits of information. I guess the most helpful and most maybe important thing is under the primary documents is the actual proposal itself. So if you click on that, it will bring up a site where you can read the whole full text of the rule as either in kind of the website itself or as a PDF, whatever is easier. And also, there's the comment now bucket or button right next to that, which you would hit if you wanted to leave a comment. And they also have the due date there of February 21st. You also can see if you click on you can see scrolling down the supporting documents we have, which is, I guess, all the documents that went into our proposal. And if you click on View All, it'll bring you to a page like this, where you can see all 449 supporting documents, which if you sort by the ID number, the 7 primary background documents will be the first documents you see. And those might be the most helpful to focus on. And I just real quickly give you an overview of what those 7 are. There's the first one that you'll see will be the economic sector profile for the industry. And that basically just is a kind of a summary of public data that the agency collected and some analysis done by the agency looking at the economics of the industry. It offers a high-level summary of the various financial metrics and like market conditions, diversification trends, looks at industry default risk, and also accounting standards for environmental liabilities in the industry, and some general discussion of bankruptcy in the industry. The next document you would see on this docket page would be the background document regarding the enforcement settlement and judgment research. And in that document, you can provide you can see information from EPA's ECHO database, which is the Environment and Compliance History Online Data System, and kind of the some of the information that we collected and assembled about the enforcement activities, the compliance assistance, and the monitoring work in that industry. And you can get numbers like the number of cases in the industry, the value of the various penalties and recoveries assessed in the industry. Just information like that can be found in that document. The third document you'll see is a document called the Circle 1B Background Document for Petroleum Existing Financial Responsibility Requirements. And that, as the title may suggest, is just a document that identifies the applicable state and federal financial responsibility regulations and laws that EPA identified as part of its broad review of what existing financial responsibility laws were out there that would be potentially applicable to this industry. The next document would be the background document that describes the federal, state, and voluntary programs that exist in the industry, and that's it's a big one in terms of just size and nothing else. And it identifies existing environmental regulations relevant to facilities within this industry. It describes the voluntary programs which petroleum and coal products manufacturing facilities may participate in and that may complement the existing regulatory regime. And it also reviews available literature on the regulations and voluntary programs and their effectiveness at preventing releases and mitigating any harm that may come from any releases. Finally, the next one is the background document on petroleum industry practices and environmental characterization. That's, I guess, we call it the industry practices background document for short. And there you just can find a high-level review of industry practices and operations, an environmental profile of the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry, which will give you information on the types of practices that are common at these facilities, materials and waste that are typically involved in this industry. And then the last two documents are the background document that reviews or describes the NPL cleanup site evaluation, and then the non-NPL cleanup site analysis. And so they're similar in that they're both describing a similar kind of analysis, and one again is just for the NPL sites and one's for the non-NPL sites. But in those you can find the processes used to identify the cleanup and damage cases reviewed, a description of the various screens that the agency employed, and the information considered as part of the review of each case. It will have the results in analysis, and for each site, if you look at these background documents, the reader should be able to understand EPA's determination as to whether the site had examples of a pollution or release that occurred under an environmental structure similar to today's that required taxpayer-funded cleanups. So those are the key background documents and where to find them, and just an overview of the resources available in the docket. And with that, I guess we can start going to Q&As.
All right. With that, we'll go ahead and formally jump into our Q&A period. I'll remind the audience that you can use a small window in the lower corner of your screen to privately enter in any questions or other thoughts that you'd like to share with our speakers. And we'll try to get through as many as we can in the time that we have allotted today. I've got a few that have come in earlier in the queue, and I'll just start reading with this very first one that actually goes back to the original topics for today's webinar. A number of participants have chimed in and asked, when will EPA propose a rule for the chemicals industry?
Okay, yeah, this is Sonia. I can take that. So we do have a draft which is at the Office of Management and Budget for review, so that's very close to the end of the process. So we expect that there will be a proposal signed fairly soon, and then it'll be a little bit of time before it actually gets published in the Federal Register. It's worth noting that you can keep an eye on the EPA website, because once it is signed, we will be posting a pre-publication copy along with the key background documents, so that can give people a head start at looking at that. And we also are looking, because we couldn't fit it into this webinar, at this scheduling another webinar specific to the chemical industry in the spring.
Okay. All right. Our next question circles back to the petroleum industry. There are a couple of people here who have asked, what exactly are the next steps for this proposal? And again, this is just for the petroleum industry.
Okay. So I can take that one, too. We are in the public comment period now. The public comment period for the petroleum and coal products manufacturing sector closes on February 21st. And I think there was also a question about, there was confusion about the date of February 28th that's in the slide. That is something separate that's for if tribes are interested in consulting with EPA, or if the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act groups are interested in engaging with EPA, they should let us know by February 28th. So again, those are the dates for engaging on the petroleum and coal products proposal. That's February 21st is the close of comment period. And as I think Peggy noted earlier, although the court order deadline for the final rule is December 1st of 2021, we are on a schedule that anticipates publishing the final rule sooner than that.
Okay, great. Our next question has a participant who wanted to know, can you explain why EPA is not proposing financial responsibility requirements? I think they're referencing specifically the petroleum industry.
Okay, yeah, this is Mike. I'll answer that one. So I guess the best answer would probably be just to suggest that they, I mean, the best information would be in the proposal itself. There's actually a section titled, I'm looking at the table of contents, it's called Decision to Not Propose Requirements, and that's section 8 of the proposal. And there it basically says something along the lines of based on the analysis described, including the history of cleanups under Superfund for this industry and the modern industry practices in the industry today and applicable federal and state regulations, EPA concluded that the risk posed by the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry does not warrant financial responsibility. And so it's the proposal doesn't issue any requirements on those grounds.
Okay, great. Thank you. What about concern that without these financial responsibility requirements, we'll wind up having fewer cleaned up sites? Is EPA concerned about that?
Yes, I can take that one. My name is Linda Barr. I'm also with EPA's Office of Resource Conservation and Recovery. EPA's proposed action for the petroleum industry does not drop existing regulations. Instead, it's a proposal to not impose new financial responsibility requirements, and in this case for petroleum. So existing regulations would continue to apply to facilities in the petroleum industry, so including requirements for proper closure of certain units and corrective action for releases of hazardous materials. If you want to get some additional information on this, you can look at 84 Federal Register, page 70478, that's the overview of federal and state regulatory programs and industry voluntary practices that are applicable to facilities in this industry.
Okay. I'm still seeing a couple of other questions here that are, again, focusing on this cost of cleanup. So this one comment, one question asks, are there concerns that without those types of financial responsibility requirements, that, for example, your taxpayers are going to be on the hook for the cleanup costs if one of these companies goes bankrupt.
Yeah, this is Mike, and I can answer that. And again, it's good to like look at the preamble that has information that would kind of help, and it's, I guess, you know, that decision not to propose section, which I think I said earlier, section 8, there's also, this question kind of gets into like what we see in the economics of the industry, which is, I don't remember the section number off the top of my head, but I think it's actually section 6, titled Petroleum and Coal Products Manufacturing Industry Overview. That might help answer this question. But in short, the EPA looked at the need for financial responsibility with the risk of taxpayer-funded cleanups in mind, particularly taxpayer-funded cleanups at facilities in this industry that were operating under modern management practices and under modern regulations. So basically, the types of facilities that are currently operating today, and which would be the types of facilities that we would be requiring Circular 108B financial responsibility from. So we looked at those facilities and were those creating problems for the taxpayers. And we found, you know, looking at that, as the cleanup site analysis shows, and when we looked at the modern regulatory framework existence today, that research, that in this sector, that there was pretty limited impact to taxpayers from facilities under a modern regulatory framework. You know, I think it was the one site that we saw was a problem, the one removal site. And so we didn't think it warranted that. And we, additionally, we did look at the economic condition and the profile of the industry. And generally, we found it to be relatively stable with a low default risk. And in that kind of economic research, we also kind of described what protections exist under bankruptcy, the bankruptcy law. And, you know, the proposal does note that in bankruptcy, since the question, the comment or the questioner asked about bankruptcy, firms do generally remain liable for environmental compliance obligations, like when they're restructuring under Chapter 11. So that's some extra, that's extra protection. Hopefully that gets to the questioner's question.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'm taking a quick look in here. And it looks like there's another question just in terms of how EPA can sort of do what it does with this. So the exact question asks, if there are no financial responsibility requirements for the petroleum industry, can EPA still require cleanup?
Hi, yeah, this is Charlotte Mooney, and I also work here at EPA. So I'll go ahead and answer that question. And that's a good one, because I think sometimes people misunderstand what this proposed rule does. It proposes not to impose any new financial responsibility requirements on this industry under the Superfund statute, CERCLA, but it doesn't impact any of the existing requirements that are throughout the CERCLA statute that, for example, allow EPA to take a response action at any kind of facility, be it, you know, petroleum facility or any other industry, or to take an enforcement action to require the owner-operator to take a response action in response to some kind of contaminant incident. Similarly, if EPA were responding to or working with a PRP who was responding to an incident or a cleanup at a facility, in the specific individual contracts that get worked out around who's going to do what and who's going to pay for what in cleaning up those facilities, EPA could require specifically for that one entity financial assurance as part of the agreements around cleaning up that site. So basically not finalizing any financial assurance under this rule wouldn't change any of the existing Superfund activity and authorities that EPA has to require cleanup at petroleum facilities or any other facilities.
Okay. That definitely helps. Thank you. So we are reaching the end time that we had scheduled for today's webinar. So I wanted to be sure to close out with a reminder to everyone. For those of you who may have written in additional comments, we are just going to remind you that EPA is encouraging anyone and everyone who's interested to share their written comments using the link that's been shared with you in the presentation materials. We also included it in the Q&A window, so you should be able to click on that and pop it right open. And then as noted, they've already addressed the dates of when those materials are due. So again, that the due date in that online website is February 21st. So with that, I think what I'm going to do is, just in the interest of time, we'll walk through a series of other final reminders. And again, we may not be able to address all of the other questions that were in the queue today, but we do encourage everybody to send those comments in as part of the online system that was highlighted in today's live demonstration. So let me thank our presenters and organizers who helped put on today's session and sort of shared their expertise with everyone today. I want to thank those of you who registered and participated in today's webinar. And what I'm going to do now is just go through a few quick final reminders before we close things out today. So first, if you're looking for copies of the presentation material, we already have that posted and available to download. So when you checked in for today's webinar, you would have seen a link to the seminar homepage. And on that page, there are tabs that have information related to the webinar. And if you simply click on the one that says webinar slides, you can download a copy, or you'll find as well links to that page for commenting and accessing all the materials that Mike highlighted earlier. You'll also find that available on the middle right in the webinar under related URLs. So if you happen to be one of the lucky ones replaying today's recorded version, you can still access those links on the middle right and in the Q&A window. I will ask each of you to take just a brief moment to fill out our online feedback form and let us know how or what you thought of today's session, both in the content that was covered as well as the tool that we used to deliver it. I oftentimes get requested participation certificates, and we will issue those upon submission of a feedback form. So if you follow the link that you find on the middle right of your screen under related URLs to the seminar feedback form, once you fill that form out, as long as you check the box in the lower portion of the form to certify you were here for the whole thing or replayed the entire thing, you will then immediately, once you submit it on in, have access to a certificate that you can either download or print out for your own records. If you happen to participate in a group in a conference room, each person can actually click the link to the feedback form and fill it out on their own, even if they didn't register individually for the session. So if you were the one who set up that conference room, I encourage you to share that link to the feedback form with others who joined you. Then, as noted, today's session was